15 years ago, foreign correspondent Neil McFarquhar was working on a big story, the Persian Gulf War. He reported from Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Iraq. At the time, he was a writer for the Associated Press. He spent a dozen years in the Middle East, including 5 years as Cairo bureau chief for the New York Times. His life in the press corps during wartime is the inspiration for his debut novel, The Sand Cafe, which will be published by Public Affairs Books tomorrow. Neil McFarquhar is in the studios of KQED in San Francisco. Hi, Neil. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Why a novel? Why a love story?
Well, I think a novel like The Sand Cafe allows you to sort of tell the story of what really happens in a slightly satiric way. Everybody who worked in Saudi Arabia during that Gulf War felt like we were caught up in Scoop, which is a novel that everybody loves. It's an Evelyn Waugh novel that was written in 1938. A British gardening correspondent with the same last name as a famous war correspondent gets sent to cover a war in Africa by mistake. And The Sand Cafe covers a bunch of reporters who are stuck in a hotel in Saudi Arabia waiting for the Gulf War to start. And they spend the time mired in the hotel, either seducing each other or trying to undermine each other. So I just sort of felt that the situation lent itself to a satirical novel.
And a novel about what you call a world press correspondent, Associated Press. I'm assuming that in many ways you're the character, Angus, and Thea, who's an ambitious TV correspondent for the network. So you had to have a love story in there somewhere, right?
I think all foreign correspondents struggle with their personal lives to an extent, and I think that what happens in the book is a reflection of that. You know, people are thrown together in these intense situations for short periods of time, and then the story drives them somewhere else. And I think what happens in The Sand Cafe is not atypical of what happens to a lot of people.
Did it strike you at the time that the people, the real people who were there, I mean, we remember, you know, the Scud Stud, Arthur Kent, you know, many of the other reporters and anchors from that war. Did it strike you at the time that these would make good characters?
Oh, we all talked about, you know, I mean, Scoop was one inspiration, but, you know, I also, when I was there, I was rereading Catch-22 because I sort of felt I was caught in this absurd situation where, you know, you wanted to cover the war, but to cover the war, you had to be in the hotel. But if you're in the hotel, you weren't really covering the war. And also sort of shades of MASH because, you know, there was this dark comedy because there were terrible things going on. Scuds were falling out of the sky and there was a war out there, but you really didn't feel it.
Many of the complaints that came out of the press coverage of that war was that it was very highly managed. I mean, you have to always, you know, get permission from, you know, this acronym or that acronym. Do you think the way that you portray the press corps kind of coping with the waiting and the boredom and everything that happens in the hotel, do you think it was unique to this conflict?
I think it was just because the system was being developed right then, because the Pentagon and the press has always had an uneasy relationship since Vietnam, where the reporters there had fairly free access. They could jump on helicopters, jump off, and they could get a good sense of what was going on in the battlefield. And then when they got back to, you know, their war hotel in Saigon and the famous 5 o'clock follies, they could challenge the military investigator about events on the ground. So a lot of the junior officers there sort of hated the way the press acted in Vietnam and were determined that it wasn't going to be repeated. And the effect of that was in Grenada and Panama. They were shut out. So in the Gulf War, there was an attempt at compromise that they would allow a limited number of people in, but it didn't really work because there were 1,000 reporters all jockeying for position, and there were about 100 slots, and then eventually I think they opened it up to about 150. So there weren't enough reporters in the first Gulf War with the army to get a sense of what they were doing. So what is immediately in front of the reporters becomes important. In The Sand Cafe, it's the Scud attacks, which really didn't affect the war. You know, the Scud attacks on the hotel, because there was all this new live technology. That's one thing I tried to capture, was how excited people were. But then they were sort of limited because all they had to report on was what was going on around the hotel because they couldn't get out.
There's a scene in the book on page 264. This is a scene where the reporters are in the hotel in Dahran and an air raid alarm goes off. Would you read that for us?
Sure. This is one scene I didn't make up. The shouting and complaining was abruptly drowned out by a deafening squawk, as if a gaggle of panicky geese had been unleashed somewhere in the hotel. It took the mob of reporters outside the military press office a minute to grasp that the horrible racket was the hotel's air raid alarm. Suddenly, they had to think about survival. Major Fergus K.W. Ramsden, a ramrod straight, 52-year-old ex-Special Forces type, the hotel manager had imported from Britain as a security consultant for the war, goaded them along. He stood in the hotel central well with his megaphone on full blast, braying over and over again. "This is a gas warning. Please put on your gas mask. Please move calmly down to the shelter." The horde descended to the basement, unable to move at speed because the entire hotel went simultaneously. One of the television crews created a bottleneck by standing on the landing just before the entrance to the bomb shelter, obstructing the stairs, until they were shoved aside by an ashen-faced reporter who snapped at them, "Find another place to get your footage." Once inside the sepulchral shelter, nobody knew what to do. They were all standing around, craning their necks to look for telephones to call their desks to explain why they weren't filing or answering the phone upstairs. The shelter consisted of the hotel kitchen, the employee dining room, a food preparation room, and a storage room. Dozens of cases of bottled water were stacked in every corner, and large Persian carpets covered the floors. The walls, white tiles, reflected a faint light in the otherwise darkened room. With everyone standing around in their odd assortment of clothes and gas masks, combined with the flashlight beams bouncing off the tiles at crazy angles, the whole place seemed to Angus like an intergalactic disco. It was the Star Wars bar with strobe lights and no alcohol.
That's Neil McFarquhar reading from The Sand Cafe, his new novel. You said this was one of the scenes you didn't have to make up. I would imagine covering the Persian Gulf War, there weren't a lot of scenes you had to make up.
It's true. The book fairly does follow the timeline. I mean, one reporter couldn't cover everything because there was a lot happening. So the events all happened. The timeline is correct, but it's all been blended a little bit.
And also the relationships between, say, the print reporters and the broadcast reporters and everybody and their editors?
Well, I think, that's certainly a classic of tension in the press business. And there is a huge amount of sort of rivalry between print and TV in the field, because the print reporters all feel like, you know, it's sort of like your rich cousins with all the money who aren't very smart. The TV people have all these incredible resources, but they don't know very much. And the television people sort of think that we secretly look down on them, or the print reporters secretly look down on them, which, of course, we do.
Because they always get their cameras in front of your face and you can't see what's going on, right?
Yes, exactly. And they always rely on steal our ideas and our copy to read behind their pretty pictures.
What was the most ridiculous circumstance you found yourself in?
I think just the number of reporters there. It was the first time that communications allowed so many people to come. So there was Vogue magazine sent a lesbian poet, and Audubon magazine sent somebody because there were dirty birds. Saddam had turned on the oil spigots and all the cormorants were suffering. And so the Audubon magazine, Soldier of Fortune had a person there. And, you know, of course, all the big media, the Washington Post and the New York Times of the world also had reporters there, and all the networks. So there was this incredible zoo in the hotel. That was the most absurd situation, because we were all stuck in the same place.
Mm. Was it difficult to write this book and not look at the situation through the lens of today? Specifically, we're reading about Saudi Arabia. Osama bin Laden's name comes up probably in the first 50 pages of the book. And of course, because of the American troops in Saudi Arabia, that's the reason Osama bin Laden has given for his terror war. And was it hard to write without looking through the lens of today?
To a certain extent, but I think, one of the important things is that Saudi Arabia is an incredibly crucial country in the Middle East for the United States, and indeed for the whole world, because we get 15% of our daily oil needs from there. And I think when you talk to people about Saudi Arabia in the United States, you know, you say, what do you think of when you think of Saudi Arabia? And the classic answer was, you know, camels and oil. And at the time of the Sand Cafe, that held true. And I think now it's probably camels, oil, and terrorism. But it is an incredibly interesting society. And that's one of the reasons, another reason I wanted to write the Sand Cafe was I wanted to show what some of that society is like. I mean, there really are signs in little fast food restaurants like Baskin Robbins saying women are not allowed to sit in this store. And one reporter really did meet a Saudi who was, you know, mouthing all these pieties about how important his religion was to him, and then took her down into the basement where naked Filipinas were dancing in his private bar. So I think as a correspondent, I always try and read a novel about the country I'm going to, because it often just sort of gives you a sense of the people. And I think the Saudi Arabia of, you know, 1990 and 1991, while it's changed, it's still fairly similar today.
Neil McFarquhar. His debut novel, The Sand Cafe, is published tomorrow by Public Affairs Books. He joined us from the studios of KQED in San Francisco. Thanks a lot, Neil. Good luck.
Thank you.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.